All right, guys, you are Locked On Falcons. I am your host, Aaron Freeman. Today, I am joined by Locked On Bengals host, James Rapine. We're going to be talking about the Cincinnati Bengals offseason moves and their season outlook.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, founder of FalFans.com, one of the longest-running Falcon websites on the Internet, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast, and, of course, I'm on Twitter, at FalFans. Today, I'm joined by James Rapine, again, the host of Locked On Bengals. We're going to be talking about this upcoming Bengals season as part of our series on this Locked On Falcons podcast to get more familiar with the AFC North teams. Welcome to the show, James.
I appreciate you having me, Aaron. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm eager to talk about the Bengals because I feel like, at least from my perspective, they're like the forgotten stepchild of the AFC North, just because, you know, they were a team that for a very long time were, you know, sort of a doormat in the NFL throughout the 90s, and then they sort of had that resurgence earlier this century, I guess you could say, back in 2011, I guess it was, and then the last couple of years have sort of fallen by the wayside. And you know, you have the Ravens, you have the Steelers, even the Browns seem to be more interesting just because of how bad they are. And so the Bengals just seem to get lost in the shuffle. I don't know if you feel the same way.
That's fair. I mean, look, you're talking about the Steelers who they have plenty of Super Bowl trophies. The Ravens who have a couple over the past 20 years. The Bengals who haven't won a playoff game in my lifetime. And then the Browns, they're interesting, you're right, because they've been a doormat, because they've been embarrassing at times. So right now, yeah, I get why. I totally do. Especially when you're talking about a team that's had the same head coach for the past 15 years. So, absolutely, I agree with that.
I guess that's a good place to start. It seemed like everybody seemed, expecting that Marvin Lewis, last year would be Marvin Lewis's last year. They brought him back. From my perspective, it seemed like they hired Terrell Austin as their new defensive coordinator so that he could be maybe potentially the head coach in waiting, since he was a hot name a couple of years ago among head coaching circles. I'm curious if that's sort of what you're hearing, or what is sort of the future as far as this Bengals organization at the top?
Right now, it's all in on Marvin. I mean, you're right. I think if Terrell Austin has some success, Bengals owner Mike Brown likes familiarity, and he would go with someone on the staff if he could. That being said, you're right, it was a shock with Marvin coming back. It just seemed like, and there was that report, Adam Schefter reported it, I think it was week 14, they traveled up to Minnesota and the Bengals got the heads kicked in, but like an hour before the game, this report came out and the players were on the bus and they had their phones out and they saw it on their way to the stadium to play the Vikings, that Marvin Lewis was out at the end of the year. And that was a big distraction on that day, not to say that the Bengals would have actually competed with the Vikings at all, but it was certainly something that was expected. And I guess I shouldn't say shock, just because Mike Brown is extremely loyal, but it was certainly a surprise that Marvin Lewis got a 2-year contract extension. I think what it boils down to, Aaron, is Marvin wanted to see if there was anything else out there. There wasn't, and he was able to talk his way back into getting a 2-year contract with the Bengals. Now, they've made a lot of coaching changes, Terrell Austin being one of them. If he has success on defense and Marvin Lewis maybe decides to retire after a year, maybe 2 years down the line, I could see that where Terrell Austin slides in. But right now it looks like it's Marvin Lewis or bust for the Bengals.
Now, you mentioned those coaching changes, and they sort of revamped their offensive coaching staff among the assistant coach. They have a second year, I guess, coordinator in Bill Lazor, who took over for Ken Zampezi at the start of last season. But basically, he's supposed to be implementing something new. That for a long time, the Bengals have been basically, from what I understand, operating under sort of what Jay Gruden did and what Hugh Jackson did, adjusting to that. And obviously, it didn't work out with Zampezi following on the heels of that. But what I understand is Lazor is bringing in something completely different and new. And I'm curious, what are your thoughts on sort of what changes you are expecting from this Bengals offense this year?
Well, I'm hoping that the changes are about as simple. Heck, I could compare it to the Falcons when they had Kyle Shanahan. It seemed like, and at least from afar, from here in Cincinnati, that Shanahan made things easier. on Matt Ryan, gave him weapons on the outside. They utilized Taylor Gabriel, a guy who's fast, obviously, in space, a guy Bengals fans are familiar with, and Mohamed Sanu. I think it's just about utilizing their weapons. The Bengals have plenty of weapons. They have a two-man backfield in Joe Mixon and Giovanni Bernard. And last year they had one of the worst offenses, and especially one of the worst rushing offenses in the league. Part of that was the offensive line. Part of it just seemed like the offense in the playbook just was not there. They could not figure out how to use Mixon and Giovanni Bernard at the same time on third down, who should be out there, who shouldn't. So that's the first thing, is I need to see them do that and just really put their best players in position to succeed, because the past few years, the past 2 years especially, where A.J. Green has kind of been the focal point of the offense, and there's no one else to really get the ball to in space or to make a play. I think part of that has to do with the playbook. And so instead of being too reliant on A.J. Green, I think it's up to Bill Lazor to give Andy Dalton a chance to succeed and build around an offensive line that should be better, but still probably will be around average at best by NFL standards, and have success on offense. This offense was 32nd in the league last year in total offense. And when you're talking about a team that has a top five wide receiver, quarterback, who he might not be great in Andy Dalton, and most people in Cincinnati think I criticize him too much, but he's certainly a franchise quarterback in his prime. That can't happen. So I think Bill Lazor in his offense, it's the most interesting storyline in training camp to see he can revamp it and get it back to where it was a few years ago.
Yeah, I have some additional questions about the Bengals' offense and sort of their weapons. But I first want to plug LockedOnSports.com, your one-stop hub for the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can find content related to the NFL, NBA, and Major League Baseball. Again, LockedOnSports.com, your team every day. You talk about sort of the focus on A.J. Green. I find it interesting because the Falcons sort of went through that same thing, as you mentioned, with sort of Julio Jones, where there was a couple of years there, you know, when Tony Gonzalez and Roddy White were getting up in years and before sort of the explosion that we saw in 2016, where the Falcons were almost entirely reliant on Julio Jones to carry their offense without sort of a healthy running game. And even though that necessarily didn't lead to the Falcons having overall team success in large part due to struggles on the defensive side of the ball, they still were a very productive offense. But as you mentioned, the Bengals, despite the fact that having one of the best receivers in the league, still struggled to put points on the board last year. I'm curious, sort of, you talked about Joe Mixon, and we should, of course, talk about John Ross, two second-year players that you would look at on paper, two extremely talented playmakers. Ross played, what, 17 snaps last year? Mixon seemed to be an afterthought after, you know, being drafted. Is there expectations that those two guys, among several other players, are going to be able to step up this year and be sort of the second and third fiddle to an A.J. Green and give that Bengals offense the kick it had a couple years ago when it seemed to be firing on all cylinders, when guys like Tyler Eifert, among others, were all playing at their high level?
Yeah, I think the expectation for both players is sky high. It's interesting. Mixon was drafted in the second round, obviously not because of talent, because of off-the-field issues and the incident he had in college. And honestly, I think the Bengals look at him as a surefire RB1 who can do it all. I think fans feel that way, too, that he has all the talent to just really excel and be a bell cow, Le'Veon Bell type, honestly, in this offense. So we'll see if he can do that. I will say this, if he can, you know how important a running game is for an offense. The Bengals haven't had a consistent running game really since 2014. The 2015 offense was really good, but Jeremy Hill was averaging less than 4 yards a carry that year. It was mostly on the passing game that vaulted that team to its 12-4 record. So I think a running game, and Joe Mixon especially, he's going to have to lead that. I know I mentioned Giovanni Bernard, but there's some pressure on Mixon, and I know he's dropped some weight and is as lean as ever from everything I'm seeing, so the sky's the limit for him. As for John Ross, I'm probably the biggest John Ross defender in Cincinnati, because the moment they picked him, so many Bengals fans groaned and moaned and said he's too small or he had injuries, and a lot of it's valid. Look, he's had his fair share of injuries, including last year, but this team, Aaron, hasn't had a deep threat opposite A.J. Green you could, I guess, say Marvin Jones, but Marvin Jones really wasn't this speedster, deep threat type that could just make a defense and make a safeties just fear him. And I think John Ross, that's his potential. Now, will he get there? Who knows? I think if he stays healthy, he can. He's had a really good OTAs. He's 100% healthy. I've talked to him multiple times this offseason. And I think if this offense reaches its full potential, it's because Ross and Mixon have a huge role in that and play a huge hand in doing so. And honestly, the idea of a healthy John Ross on one side, A.J. Green on the other, and Joe Mixon and Giovanni Bernard out of the backfield should have a lot of fans salivating. It's a lot of ifs with the Bengals, and that's the concern. There's health issues and playbook issues. But, yeah, there's a lot of pressure on both players to perform this year, and the Bengals are certainly relying on them.
Now, a core element, a key element of the Bengals' offense is the offensive line. And I joked on Twitter not too long ago that anytime I go back and watch film of anybody in 2017 and they go against the Bengals' offensive line, if they're a pass rusher, it's going to be just nonstop highlight film. They made the upgrades this offseason with Cordy Glenn and Billy Price. Do you feel like, obviously, two potentially very significant upgrades at two key areas which were highly problematic for the team at left tackle and center? Who is their starting center that's now in Buffalo? I'm blanking on his name.
You're fine. Russell Bodine.
Oh, yes, of course. The incomparable Russell Bodine.
exactly.
And of course, you know, Cedric Aboye, who just basically has been nothing more than a bust since they drafted him to be Andrew Whitworth's replacement. So obviously they've made two upgrades there, but do you feel like those two guys will go a long way to stabilizing this offensive line, despite the fact that there are still some questions on the right side of the offensive line where you still might have guys like Jake Fisher, you still might have guys like Trey Hopkins. You know, they picked up Bobby Hart, who struggled in New York last year. It's a step forward, but is it a big enough step to really solidify this offensive line?
I think it is, as long as they can stay healthy. Cordy Glenn played 6 games last year. The year before that, he played 10. If you go back a couple years, he was really good and played a lot of games. I've talked to Cordy. He's said he's 100% healthy, ready to go. And he's exactly what they look for in a left tackle. When Andrew Whitworth left after the 2016 season, it was just such a hole. And you're right, Cedric Aboye, he couldn't fill it last year. Wasn't even close to filling it. The Bengals hoped, but it wasn't something. They've whiffed on Aboye. He's a bust. And most people here feel that way. Now, maybe new offensive line coach Frank Pollock can get something more out of him, but I'm not counting on it. So I've written him off, as a lot of fans have as well. But yeah, Cordy Glenn, that acquisition, they're banking on that to be a significant upgrade from what they've had over the past year at left tackle. And I think it will be. Now, you're right, Billy Price, he should be an upgrade too. It's not hard to upgrade from Russell Bodine. There's so many times where Russell Bodine just got ran over as soon as Andy Dalton, as he hiked the ball. And it was one of those things where fans were getting sick of it. That being said, he's got a health issue too. Like, he was healthy throughout his career at Ohio State, had the most starts in Ohio State history for an offensive lineman, 55 consecutive starts. So he was extremely durable in college. That being said, he tore his pec at the combine, is 100% clear now, has worked out. Get this, he worked out to get clear and had to rehab and do all that stuff. But then he didn't leave town. He didn't leave the facility or anything. He's at Paul Brown Stadium every single day up until training camp, working, trying to get all the way back to where he was, and probably even stronger than he was before the pec injury. So I like what I've seen from Billy Price. If he can stay healthy and Cordy Glenn can stay healthy, this offensive line should be better. I'm not really worried about the right guard position. I think Trey Hopkins was okay last year at times, and they got a couple other guys in Christian Westerman and Alex Redmond that could slide in at guard and I think be at least competent. I am worried about right tackle, though, because they didn't sign anyone except Bobby Hart. I don't think anyone's afraid of Bobby Hart playing right tackle. And then you got Jake Fisher and Cedric Aboye competing for that. So the right tackle spot is worrisome. But outside of that, I think if they're healthy, the Bengals offensive line should be significantly better than last season.
It seems like the "if they're healthy" is a common phrase when it comes to the Bengals, because it seems like so many players on the roster have injury concerns. And I guess, you know, the Falcons have been a team that have been unnaturally healthy the last couple of years. And there's always this fear in the back of my head that one of these years it's going to catch up to them. You know, law of averages say that the pendulum will swing back in the other direction. But, you know, I'm curious sort of looking at a team and covering a team that basically has the talent to be a playoff contender, at least on paper. But it seems so much of it is tied to whether or not these guys can make it through, you know, 15, 16 games in a season in order for them to achieve that sort of success.
Yeah, it's very nerve-wracking, I think, for fans. And as someone who is probably going to be asked to predict where they go or how well they do, heck, I got asked it a couple weeks ago on I did a TV spot, and they asked me, and I'm like, well, look, I think best case scenario, they could go 11-5 if everyone stays healthy. They could really surprise some people. Worst case, though, if they get injured and dinged up, which we've seen in recent years, they could be 5-11 or 6-10. And that's why the Vegas, I've seen the over-under in Vegas hover around between 6-7, and I think it's spot on. Honestly, yeah, there's a lot of risk in it. And Cordy Glenn, they looked at his medicals and they felt comfortable trading for him from Buffalo. They traded back from the 12th pick to the 21st overall pick in the draft to get Cordy Glenn, and they felt comfortable with that. Billy Price, they felt comfortable taking him in round one, even though he had the torn pec. So we'll see. Same thing with John Ross. You know, they were comfortable taking him 9th overall last year, even though he had health concerns. So it's a lot of risk, at least on paper. Heck, I haven't even mentioned Tyler Eifert, who has had his fair share of injury issues. Who knows what's going on with him? I know he tweaked his back in minicamp, so not a good start for to the season for him. So we'll see there. But yeah, it's a team that might have, and I said this on Locked On Bengals a couple weeks ago, might have the highest ceiling or gap between highest ceiling and lowest floor. Like, I would really put it around 6 wins, and not many teams could win or lose 6 games depending on health, unless we're talking about quarterback health. But that's where the Bengals are at right now.
Yeah. Now that I have him here, might as well go ahead and plug Locked On Bengals podcast with host James Rapine. He's breaking down the Bengals and much more. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I think a lot of questions with the offense, but I do think on the defensive side of the ball, there are, at least from my perspective, and that's why I have you here, because maybe you've set me straight on this, but it seems like there's a lot more, at least I would look at it with a lot more confidence, because you have a very talented defensive line with the infusion of guys like Justin Willis and Carl Lawson last year. You've made some changes along the interior to sort of, you know, promote, I guess, Andrew Billings, and drafted a couple other D tackles to sort of shore up that unit with Geno Atkins. You've made changes to the linebacker core. Vontaze Burfict is dealing with the 4-game suspension, but you've added Preston Brown. You've added Malik Jefferson to that unit. So you've gotten some talent there. And I do think, looking at the secondary, 3 first-round cornerbacks, looking at William Jackson, who's probably could arguably the best cornerback in the league that no one really knows about, and then you drafted Jesse Bates, the second-round safety out of Wake Forest this year, to go along with George Iloka, who was a guy that I know Falcon fans were particularly high on a couple of years ago when Dan Quinn first got hired, because they thought he would be the perfect fit for that sort of Cam Chancellor role. They wound up going in another direction with Keanu Neal and whatnot, but I think the defense at least has a little bit more inspiring potential to at least return to what it was a couple of years ago when it was one of the best defenses in the NFL. Do you agree?
I do. I think that was pretty accurate. Yeah, Aaron. I mean, this defense is full of guys that are, for the most part, healthy and for the most part, have high upside. You mentioned Carl Lawson. He might end up being our best pass rusher this year. And they got a guy in his prime by the name of Carlos Dunlap that's going to probably try to have a career year because he's in a contract year. Geno Atkins as well. They really have done a good job over the past year or so, year plus, of turning a weakness into a strength. They were weak on the defensive line in their pass rush, especially in 2016. Last season, Carl Lawson came in, Jordan Willis came in, and really gave it a boost. And I think they did an even better job this offseason because they added a Chris Baker, who flamed out in Tampa Bay, was a free agent that a lot of people wanted a couple years back. and he didn't have success in Tampa Bay. I think he might have success now with the Bengals. So we'll see if he can. It's a one-year deal. But overall, I think this defense, if they're going to return to that playoff level of football, the defense is going to have to be a big reason why. I think they can. I don't really question the defense. Didn't last year. I'm so focused on up the past couple of seasons. But you're right. I think the pass rush is better than ever, or at least over the past probably 3 or 4 years. I think they finally found a lockdown, true shutdown corner in William Jackson III. I mean, he's just a stud, and I think the sky's the limit for him. So this defense could be really good. And if, let's say, you know, John Ross gets injured or some of their offensive linemen struggle, they might be able to rely on their defense a little bit and make it ugly and still be able to hang their hat and get some wins. So we'll see, but I do agree. I think the defense could be and should be their strength.
Now, talking about William Jackson, I'm just curious just to get a heads up for that Week 4 Falcons-Bengals matchup. Do you think that they'll put him on Julio Jones and have him shadow him? Assuming
that's what I would do.
With safety help, you know, obviously you have to give safety help, but have him follow him around the field? Is that something that the Bengals typically do?
We'll see with Terrell Austin, but that's what I would do. I wouldn't let Dre Kirkpatrick get anywhere near Julio. but that being said, you know, Dre has some size. But I just think William Jackson has the size-speed combo that you need to guard some of those guys. He had a lot of success last year, and I know Brown isn't the biggest receiver in the league, but he had a lot of success last year against Antonio Brown. And I think it really comes down to William Jackson is your best corner. He's much, like just on another level compared to a guy like Dre Kirkpatrick. That's no knock on Dre. It's just the reality of it. So I would have him follow Julio. They open up week one against Indianapolis. I would have him follow T.Y. Hilton. So we'll see if they do it. Haven't really gotten those answers yet. But, yeah, if I'm Terrell Austin, they haven't typically done it in the past, but if I'm Terrell Austin, I would do it this year because they have that guy. You can only do that if you have that guy, and they do this year, so they might as well utilize him.
I want to say that Austin did it last year with Darius Slay in that Detroit Falcons game.
I think he did. Yeah, I think he did. I think he did with AJ Green as well. I think Slay was on Green a lot.
Yeah, so I agree with you. I think it makes a lot of sense for them to do that, and that's certainly something that I always look forward to these, you know, Julio Jones versus this other top corner matchups because those wind up being very fun to watch because you give a little, you take a little.
It would be a battle. It'd be a fun battle, and the thing is it's not like last year William Jackson didn't get beat. Like there were a couple times he got beat deep. But he has such closing speed and ball skills that he was beat. The ball's in the air. He sees it, closes on it, and it was a well-thrown ball multiple times, and he just makes a great play. And so, yeah, a Julio Jackson matchup, that's something. Heck, that you could put that on pay-per-view. We'll pay. At least I'd pay.
I would, too.
To see it. Not a lot, you know, not $99, but you know, $5.99.
Yeah, sure.
I'll do that.
No, I'm with you on that one. I'm curious sort of what are your expectations with the Burfict suspension? Because obviously he's a 4-game suspension, so he won't be in that Falcon game. Do you feel like guys like Preston Brown and Malik Jefferson, among others, the Vincent Ray, who seems like he's been a Bengal for about 12 years, are those guys going to be able to sort of fill the void that Burfict, that they lose with Burfict being out?
Yeah. I mean, you can't replace a Burfict just because he's got all the football instincts you could ask for. And despite what some say about him, he really is a really intelligent, instinctive, and smart football player. So they're not going to be able to replace him. But they're used to playing without him. I mean, he's been suspended the last 3-4 years to start the year. At some point, he's missed time. And he's dealt with his fair share of injuries. He obviously had a concussion last year and had some things that kept him off the field. So, yeah, I think they're prepared to at least survive without him. It's not like it makes or breaks their defense. He makes them better. He's a guy that there aren't many players in the NFL like him when he's dialed in and focused. But I think so. I think that they'll use and rely on Vinny Ray because they trust him. They'll rely on a guy like Preston Brown, who I keep hearing it, how he led the NFL in tackles last year. I don't think he's that caliber of a player, but he did statistically lead the NFL in tackles last year. And overall, the serviceable. They have another guy, third-year player out of Nevada, Nick Vigil, who's pretty athletic. He's a smaller linebacker, but pretty athletic. And then Jordan Evans. He's a second-year player athletic as well, came from Oklahoma. So I think they'll be okay. But that being said, I would try to attack that the first four games of the year. I think that's the one weakness that we're looking at now on the Bengals without Burfict is linebacker on that defense. So teams should attack it, but the Bengals have dealt with or been without him plenty of times.
Okay. Well, James, is there any other thoughts that you have on the Bengals season or any questions you have towards me before we wrap this thing up?
Well, I would hope that maybe you could give the Bengals just call Mike Brown or Marvin Lewis or someone advice on how to use two running backs that are both talented because the Falcons do a good job of it. How to use quick wide receivers in space. The Falcons have done a good job with that as well with like a Taylor Gabriel. So if you could just give them offensive advice before the season, especially before the week four matchup, I would appreciate it.
All right, I'll see what I can do, James.
Yeah, they need it, that's for sure.
All right, man. Let the people know where they can find you on Twitter and what you got coming up on Locked On Bengals in the coming weeks.
Gotcha. Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at James Rapine. I have a ton of training camp coverage coming up. I'll be down at training camp starting July 26th. You get player interviews, videos, all the fun stuff, plenty of writing as well at LockedOnBengals.com. So a lot coming up, and I know a lot's coming up for you too, Aaron. It's like it's the calm before the storm for our business.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. All right, man. I appreciate this, and I look forward to talking to you in, I guess, two months, I guess, something like that.
Yeah, two and a half months. Hopefully both teams are 3-0.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah. We'll root for that.
Sounds good, man.
All right, man. We'll talk again later this September.
All right. Thanks, Aaron.
All right. You have a good one. So, guys, that is it for this week, breaking down three out of the four AFC North teams. We got one more to go with the Cleveland Browns that will come next week. Of course, we'll also be wrapping up our series, our positional breakdowns, looking at the cornerbacks, safeties, and special teams. So that gives us four shows next week. The cornerbacks will be coming on Monday, but that leaves the door open for a Q&A potentially on Friday. So if you guys have any questions that you want to get in ahead of time, you know, the week before training camp starts, you can do so by getting at me at FalcFans on Twitter. If it's a podcast-related tweet, just let me know that it's podcast-related within the tweet. But it's just easier to go ahead and send all any questions related to the podcast or that you want me to answer on the podcast to the Locked On Falcons Twitter account. That's the show's Twitter handle. Of course, if you don't have Twitter, you can go in that other social media behemoth by the name of Facebook. Locked On Falcons is the place there. Give us a like while you're there. If you don't have social media, you stay away from social media like a weird person, but also a sane person. Then you can email me at lockedonfalcons@mail.com. And of course, you can leave a comment as well at lockedonfalcons.com or falcfans.com where the show is posted daily. So, yeah, guys, that's what's on deck. Then the following week will be the week of training camp, and we'll have some additional guests, maybe even a fan talk or so, to sort of get you guys geared up for that week of training camp. And then after that, we'll have our reactions to what's going down at training camp, any breaking news, any interesting developments and whatnot. Since I will not be attending training camp, I won't be able to give you like daily practice updates. But I'll do my best to, you know, keep my ear to the ground and have people that are at training camp and get you guys on the podcast so that you guys can stay up to date on all things Falcons. So, all right, guys, until then.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.